time once more for the Greenpeace UK podcast, environmental news and views in handy bite-sized chunks. I'm Jamie Woolley, and coming up...
Looks like a bullet. It looks like an egg with a flat base on it.
We meet the man behind a new energy-efficient house, the EcoHab. But first, if you're a fish fan, you probably know that many dinner table favourites are under threat as industrial fishing fleets chase after smaller and smaller shoals, and species like cod and bluefin tuna could disappear altogether. Fortunately, a number of chefs and restaurateurs are looking at their menus and selecting fish that is caught in ways that allow fish stocks to recover and don't trash the rest of the ocean as well. Earlier this year, we launched the Seafood Sea Life campaign, and together with foodies such as Tom Akins, Hugh Fernley Whittenstall, and Raymond Blanc, who have all been working on this for a while, we're promoting sustainable seafood in the catering industry. Another advocate of good fishing practices is Geeti Singh, owner of the Duke of Cambridge pub in North London. Our fish fanatic Sarah Sharaka went to meet her.
Tell us where your fish is from and why it's important to know that for you and for your customers.
Well, we buy our fish mostly off the south and east coasts of Britain, and we buy directly off small day boats. So we've got one fish supplier who's an ex-fisherman who kind of links up with day boats on the east coast, and we buy directly off him. And we buy off the MSC Hastings fishery as well. And then we have a few other guys around the coast that we support who are just individual day boats. There's a guy called Chris Bean down in Cornwall. It's just him and his daughter, a fabulous team. So that's predominantly where that is only where we buy our fish from. We don't buy it from any other source that isn't fully traceable and fully trustable.
That's great. And I hear that recently the Duke of Cambridge and some other restaurants got certified by the Marine Stewardship Council. What does that actually mean, and what have your customers said about it?
Basically, what it means is that we have chain of custody certification, which means from where the fish is caught to how it's presented on the plate, there's full traceability on that MSC certified fish. The customers absolutely love it. It's really brilliant. I think, you know, we can talk about our fish policy being sustainable. We can talk about it being approved by the Marine Conservation Society. We were one of the first fish, well, we were the first fish purchasing policy in the country to be approved by the Marine Conservation Society as well. But it's quite untangible.
Yes.
Whereas the MSC logo is there, it's clear. You know, people basically understand that simple, straightforward logo, so people really like it.
Greenpeace have done a lot of work in the past few years on sustainable seafood with supermarkets. But I guess we found that the restaurant sector was lagging behind a little bit. And that's why we started this initiative, Seafood Sea Life. Obviously, you're one of the real progressives. But what advice would you give to other restaurants that are just really at the start of the process, trying to find out where their fish comes from?
What people need to do from a restaurant point of view, it's put phenomenal pressure on their suppliers. Until their suppliers change their behaviour and give them traceability, supply them with MSC certified fish, or at least some traceability of where their fish is coming from, then it's going to be very hard for them to change their behaviour. And ultimately, if you threaten to move your trade elsewhere, the supplier will start to change. And they are thinking about it. Those big suppliers are changing their behaviour, and they're aware of it now. So it's possible. I really think it's possible to make them change, like you've done with the supermarkets. You know, that was the only way you were going to get the consumer to have the choice of how they were going to buy their fish and whether they could buy sustainably, was to get the supermarkets to change their behaviour.
Okay, well, I'm starting to feel really hungry now because I can smell, it's just before lunch, I can smell all the food and I can actually see someone writing up the lunch menu up there. But what's your favourite fish dish that you serve in the Duke of Cambridge?
Well, that's a very difficult question. Our menu changes twice a day, and obviously the fish dish changes, you know, according to what the catch is. And even, you know, sometimes we don't have fish if the weather's really bad. But I'd say MSC herring, particularly because of its fabulous status, breaded and pan-fried and maybe served at this time of year with a lovely salad.
I'm even more hungry now. You said before that people sometimes let their morals go out of the window when they're in a restaurant, and I think we're all guilty of that. Now we're quite lucky that we've got lots of places you can go that sell sustainable fish, but if you're prepared to do this, are you able to own up to the most dodgy, unsustainable fish that you ate in the past before you were initiated in the way of...
Oh, God. What a question. Okay, so it would have to be prawns, I'm ashamed to say, in a very crass British way. I love prawns. But since the Environmental Justice Foundation, I read all their literature about the prawn industry, I can swear that I haven't eaten another prawn, although I will eat some shrimps sometimes. There's a great restaurant in central London that has shrimps, and I know they get them from really quite a good sustainable source, and that's wonderful. Oh, that's the worst. That's not too horrific, is it?
Yeah.
That whole guilty, you know, what we're all guilty of doing in restaurants, that I'm sure there are times when I've eaten fish in restaurants that are completely unsustainable. But the important thing is that I always ask the question, and you don't know that they're telling you the truth, because I think it's easy for everyone to say it's line caught, and sometimes I argue with them and say, you know, it can't possibly be line caught. What are you talking about? But, you know, everyone has to compromise their values sometimes. The important thing is that you keep pushing and asking the questions and making people feel guilty for not knowing the answers or doing the right thing.
Thank you very much.
That
was great.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you.
The houses most of us live in are not as energy efficient as they could be, and around 27% of the UK's carbon dioxide emissions come from the heat and electricity we use at home. But if cavity insulation and double glazing aren't up your street, perhaps a self-contained prefabricated abode might be the solution. Light on materials and low on energy use, the EcoHab was showcased on the Greenpeace field at last month's Glastonbury Festival, where people were queuing round the campsite to peek inside this snug two-storey module. And it was against this rather noisy background that I met its designer. I'm here with Aidan Quinn, Managing Director of EcoHab. Aidan, can you just explain what an EcoHab is?
Well, that's the brand name we use for this particular product, which is a dome-shaped building. This particular one we're in is 4 metres in diameter and 6 metres high. So to all intents and purposes, it looks like a bullet. It looks like an egg with a flat base on it. This one is 12 metres in diameter and is basically designed for two people short-term, for a holiday let sort of thing, a holiday home. But we actually manufacture bigger ones, so it's 6 metres in diameter. The whole idea behind the concept is to conserve energy, to use as little energy as possible. The building is highly insulated with 100 millimetres of polyurethane. It's also very airtight. In other words, it's a sealed unit, so there's no air leakage, no air infiltration. That's not controlled. To back that up, we have a hot air recovery system. So that recovers 83% of the dispelled used air and is reused within the structure. So that adds to the efficiency. Along with that, we have a wood-burning stove. And that, again, is an efficient and low-carbon way of heating a building. Because of its size, this particular one, obviously, it's very easy to heat and very easy to and very cheap to run.
And what's the EcoHab made of?
Well, we've used conventional building materials because we intend to produce these in volume. We do use recycled plastic rubber slates on the outside in this case, but they can effectively be clad with any material. On the inside, we have plasterboard, which is covered by plaster. It's built over a steel frame.
Who has been buying the EcoHabs?
The one we're in is the first production model we've made. We've already made a prototype, which I live in. We've made one which is a show house, and this is our first production model, which we hope to sell shortly. We have interested parties in quite a few pods, but planning permission has to be granted, and hopefully we'll take off from there.
And you live in an EcoHab yourself?
I live in the first prototype we made, which is not as tastefully designed as this one, but it is perfectly functional, and it was basically a guide for me on tweaking various aspects of it. So as you can imagine, to make something like this, it takes a bit of sort of R&D to get everything right.
And are there any cunning design elements or innovations that you've had to employ to fit what would be in a normal house in this relatively small space?
One of the key things about the design here is to use as little material and a variety of material as possible. Building with a dome, you do away with a roof structure as such, or with eaves and things like that. So you're eliminating materials in that respect. Because you're working with a dome, you can use a much lighter structure, less material to reinforce the structure because of its inherent strength.
Are there any other drawbacks that you've encountered?
The main drawback with this small one is having to customise and curve all the furniture to fit in tastefully. Production method and processes is actually easier. Yeah, I like the design concept as well. So, I mean, there are pluses and minuses, but overall, I do like the concept. And people do appreciate the roundness of a building. It's kind of an organic shape that you can relate to. And in a small space, seems bigger for some reason. So, I mean, that's also a benefit.
Thank you very much. And if you fancy joining the pod people, prices start at a mere 18.5 grand, which is probably a lot cheaper than the shed at the bottom of my London garden. And speaking of pods, that's all we have for this edition. For more on EcoFish and EcoHomes, visit www.greenpeace.org.uk/podcasts and follow the links. Or for that personal touch, drop a line to webteam@uk.greenpeace.org. We'll be back in early August for a bumper holiday special with enough puzzles and games and features to keep you occupied on those long car journeys. And if your free gift isn't attached, please ask your newsagent. Goodbye.